Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Yeah, you know, that's what we haven't talked about. Ireland, did you hit the links yesterday?
I did. It was fun. I did not play well, but we had a great time, and it was great to be out there. We were socially distanced the entire time.
Did everybody maintain social distance?
Yeah. I played with three other people, and we never got really near each other.
The other golfers, everybody played by the rules?
Oh, yeah. And by the way, everybody else I saw, like guys that weren't in our group, did.
Did you wear a mask?
Nope. Now, I talked to Billy Mack, Bill McDonald, and he played on Friday in Orange County. I played in Ventura County.
Chris Morales played on Saturday. He played my old nemesis course, black and gold.
Oh, did he? Yeah, Billy did wear a mask. He played in Laguna. I played in Ventura. I played at a place called River Ridge, right next door where the Cowboys hold training camp.
See, so life is getting better. There's stuff.
A lot better.
There's stuff. We're getting there. I mean, I was encouraged today that Jeff Passan reported that it's not a matter of if baseball comes back this year. It's a matter of how they come back. That's the attitude of baseball now. They are planning on it. At this point, almost everyone involved with the process agrees there will be baseball in 2020. Details are tricky. It could wind up being a shortened season. It could wind up being a gigantic tournament at the end of the summer. But no matter what, baseball is planning on being back in some way, shape, or form this year. That's the attitude that we have. NBA playoffs are going to happen in some way, shape, or form. We got to will this. We got to secret this, man. You know the secret. We've got to secret this stuff.
I'm just hoping for the best. I think that we're going to get sports. Well, we're getting golf back in June.
Yeah.
And the thing we're really got to keep an eye on is the South Korean Baseball League, the KBO, which is going to start up on May 4th, a week from today.
Yep.
That is the league that, if things go well, we had Dan Straley on a couple of weeks ago. Dan's an American pitcher playing in the KBO. If that goes well, if they can go a month playing with no fans, that's let's face it, Mace, that's our lab experiment right there.
Oh, yeah.
The KBO.
But baseball's saying we're doing it. We're doing it. I think that's the right attitude. We're doing it. Somehow, we're doing it. What team does Dan Straley play for in the KBO?
He plays for Lotte.
Yeah, that's the
Lotte Giants.
Yeah, I'm adopting the Lotte Giants in the KBO. I'm going to put some money on them.
They're like the best team, and they're known for, like he said, like their crazy rabid fan base.
Yes.
By the way, that story last night, we'll get to the last end, but that story last night about Phil coaching in the Puerto Rican League, and whatever team Phil was coaching, the mayor was just a crazy sucker. And the mayor shot an official in the leg, and his penalty was he was suspended from going to games for 1 year.
Yeah, that was it. Didn't have to go to jail. No, no involuntary manslaughter, nothing.
Serious about their basketball. Serious about it in Puerto Rico. So we're talking about the entire Isaiah Thomas, Michael Jordan thing last night. Michael Jordan, we should probably reset the whole thing, right?
Absolutely.
Go ahead, John.
All right, so the episodes 3 and 4 aired last night. This is 10 parts. So we saw episodes 1 and 2 were 8 days ago, and then episodes 3 and 4 were last night. Last night was mainly about Dennis Rodman and how Rodman started on the Pistons and then came to the Bulls, and the Bulls had to go through the Pistons. Remember, the Pistons won the title, beat the Lakers in 89, and beat the Blazers in 90. And then the Bulls basically dethroned the Pistons. And it happened, you know, they had the Pistons knocked out the Bulls in 88. They knocked out the Bulls in 89. And, they knocked them out in 89, 90. And when it got to be 91,
right,
the Bulls finally got over the hump and they destroyed the Pistons. They beat them in 4 straight games. And with about 10 seconds to go, the Pistons, and I had never seen this happened before. Now, the documentary last night said the Celtics did it to the Pistons a few years earlier, but the Celtics, to me, didn't seem to be as egregious as the Pistons. Maybe they were, and I just didn't notice.
They showed a clip of like Isaiah trying to grab Mikhail as he was going off the floor.
And Mikhail stopped. And Mikhail was talking to him.
Yeah, Mikhail did stop, yeah.
But so the Pistons, with like 10 seconds left, come up with this idea. Bill Laimbeer says, we're not going to shake their hands. We're just going to walk out against the Pistons. I mean, against the Bulls. We're just going to walk right by them after we'd been eliminated. Now, this, keep in mind, this was the two-time defending NBA champion.
Yep.
They had won it in they went to seven against the Lakers in 88 and lost. They won it in 89. They won it in 90. And with 10 seconds to go in game four of the Bulls series, they just walk off the court. And Isaiah last night tried to explain it, but listen to Jordan when the director hands an iPhone to Jordan and says, do you want to hear what Isaiah had to say about that? And here's what Jordan said.
This is Isaiah talking about the walk-off.
Well, I know it's all bull. Whatever he says now, you know it wasn't his true actions then. You know, it's time enough to think about it. Or the reaction of the public that's kind of changed his perspective of it. Yeah. You can show me anything you want. There's no way you can convince me he wasn't an ass.
No way to convince him.
Yeah, and I'm with Jordan. There's no way to convince me. You know, it to me, from the time any of us played sports, at the end of the game, the game's over, you shake hands and go home.
You shake hands.
And if you want to MF the other team and walk by them and think that you're beneath it, then there's a price to pay for that.
Right, you look at the way the following, or was it that year that the that they lost to the, that the they beat the Lakers in the finals? Yeah,
yes.
Right?
Then they went on to beat the Lakers in the finals the next
series. And afterwards, that was
an
interview with Magic Johnson, and Magic Johnson says, well, you know, they were the better team, and if you're going to lose to somebody, you lose like a superstar, lose to a superstar like Michael Jordan. All class. That's the way you, that's the textbook for how you handle a loss. As angry, as disappointed, as frustrated, as pissed off as you might be, you suck it up for a minute and you say congratulations to the other guy. And the Pistons were little bitches and they weren't able to do that.
Yeah, and Isaiah was on Get Up this morning and he was trying to, you know, to kind of revisit history here. Listen to Isaiah when he's talking about this.
First of all, let me just say this. I speak for kind of three things here. I speak for the city of Detroit. I speak for the Detroit Pistons. And then I also speak for myself. So watching the documentary, I think it's interesting. It's fun. It's entertaining right now, and I think the sports world needs it. In terms of how we felt at that particular times as champions, we were coming down. Michael Jordan was coming up. And in coming up, you have certain emotions. And in coming down as champions, you have certain emotions. And I've said this many a times. Looking back over the years, had we had the opportunity to do it all over again, I think all of us would make a different decision. Now, me, myself personally, I paid a heavy price for that decision. And in paying that price, you know, I understand that this is the sports world and everything else. But at the same time, looking back over it in terms of how we felt at that particular time, our emotional state and how we exited the floor, we actually gave the world the opportunity to look at us in a way that we never really tried to position ourselves in or project ourselves in that way. So it's unfortunate that it happened, but you know that's just how it was during that period of time.
First of all, it's not how it was during that period of time, and second of all, like acting like you're proud that we showed, I speak for the city of Detroit, we showed them a side that we wanted to, you know, we wanted to show them. What, you showed them a side that if you can't beat them, sulk off the court like crybabies?
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, he's talked about he paid a heavy price. Everybody after that realized, okay, he doesn't get it. That you know, everybody wants to win desperately, and everybody wants to, but at the end of it, what you just say, hey, we fought it out, and you were better this time. Maybe I'll get you next year. If you look at the video of Jordan in the previous 2 years when the Bulls lost,
yeah,
Pat O'Brien's walking up to Jordan, interviewing him after a loss. You can't do that anymore. Like, I was a sideline reporter for 10 years. You can't go up to a losing player after a game. But Jordan was great. They were better than us today. They just beat us. And so when it came time to pick the dream team, Isaiah was one of the best 10 players in the world.
Sure.
But they thought about it and they said, okay, do we want this guy if we by chance get upset by the Russians or Spain or Argentina, that he's going to give them the middle finger and walk off the court when we can put John Stockton and Magic Johnson on the team as our point guards? Isaiah has nobody to blame but himself for not making the dream team. Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Magic Johnson, and Larry Bird had all competed against him, and any one of those four could have stepped up and said, we got to have Isaiah on the team. But no one did because he showed his true colors. And like I said before, Mace, he's smart. Like, if you ever get a chance to talk to Isaiah, you'll realize this is not a stupid man. This guy is smart. And he just he let the world see what he's really about, and he says, I paid a very high price. You did it to yourself.
Okay, so here is again, from the get-up this morning, here is Isaiah Thomas on not being on the Dream Team because of his lapse of emotion.
Tried to do everything correctly, and I thought I should have made that Dream Team. However, I wasn't a part of it. That hurt me. And looking back, if I'm not a part of the Dream Team because, a lapse in emotion in terms of not shaking someone's hand, if that's the reason why I didn't make the Dream Team, then I am more disappointed today than I was back then when I wasn't selected.
And yet that's exactly why he wasn't on the Dream Team. He calls it a lapse of emotion. It's a character question. It's a character issue.
And Mace, let me say something else. He said in the first clip you played, I think if we had it to do over again, every one of us would have handled it differently. Bill Laimbeer was on the jump today, and Rachel Nichols asked him, if I gave you a do-over, would you handle it differently? He said, absolutely not. I would do it again today. And Laimbeer's argument was even dumber than Isaiah's.
You want to listen to that? Here's Bill Laimbeer. This is cut number three, Funch, on not shaking hands after they were eliminated in the playoffs in 91 by the Bulls.
The documentary details how you in particular were the one who told your teammates at the end of that series, we're not shaking their hands, we're just leaving. What do you remember from that?
Well, just that. They whined and cried for a year and a half about how bad we were for the game. But more importantly, they said we're bad people. We weren't bad people. We were just basketball players winning. And that kind of stuck with me because they didn't know who we were or what we were about as individuals in our family life. So all that whining they did, why shake their hand? They were just whiners. They won the series. Give them credit. We got old. They got past us. But, okay, move on.
Do you regret now not shaking their hand? Do you stand by that?
No. Why would I regret now today? I don't care what the media says about them. I never did. If I did, I'd be a basket case, especially back then. I was about winning basketball games and winning championships and did whatever I had to do to get the most out of my ability and our team. And we did. At the end of the day, we're called world champions.
And in a weird way, it almost fits the personality of that team. Like, just watching them play, you would say if there was a team that was going to walk off the court without shaking the other guy's hands, it would be them. Because of the way they played, because of the physical nature of things, because I think they knew that they were not healthy for the game. There was sort of that quality to them. And so it's not surprising, and it's not surprising to hear Laimbeer double down on it. I mean, that's just who he is. He's always been that guy.
And by the way, he says, we weren't bad guys. We were just basketball players. You blatantly decided you couldn't beat Jordan by playing by the rules, so you tackled him on every play. You tried to hurt him. They say in the documentary several times, we were going to make him pay for it by knocking him on the floor.
Okay, and so then, here's Laimbeer on the, again, from the same interview, on the Jordan rules.
Yeah, it was twofold. You couldn't let him dominate the game because, he could at times, so make him shoot jump shots. If you don't want to shoot jump shots, you want to come in to paint, well, you pay the price. That was a given. And he tried. He made some buckets, but he also hit the floor a lot. But he also, his teammates weren't capable at that time to carry the day. So we knew that he had to pass the basketball to them. We'd take our chances with them being the scorers. So it's kind of twofold. One is wear him down as much as we could within a physical aspect, but also try to force the action onto his teammates.
Yeah.
When he explains it like that, that sounds like a sound strategy. But the truth of the matter is, trying to wear him down is one thing. Blatantly trying to chop his head off in basketball is a completely gutless way to play.
Yep.
And so if you're going to do that, if you're going to, your MO is, if we get near him, let's take his head off, which they tried to do. And he was the whole reason all of us were tuning in to watch. Okay,
yep.
So Laimbeer and the Pistons decide they're going to embrace the bad boy image, and they're going to take his head off. Then he beats you four straight, and then you walk off the court because you don't respect him when he just took your best punch for four straight games? What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense.
But it's fun to watch and fun to relive, and that's the fun of the documentary, is going back and sort of reliving these moments. Which I'll be honest, John, I was drunk in college. I was talking to one last night. You know, I was drunk in college while all this stuff was going on, and because of that, it's not like we hung on to watch every game. Like we had a tea with the DGs. That we had to worry about. You know, we didn't get to see all the games because we were doing beer bonks and experimenting with weed and shrooms, and so we didn't get to see all this stuff as closely as I got to see it last night. So for me, it was a great refresher course on exactly what went on. It's fascinating.
Yeah, and it's great. The Last Dance is great. But if Isaiah says that I'm disappointed I didn't make the dream team, well, I'm disappointed that you thought you were more important than the rest of the world and you could just walk off.
Yep.
You know, you made your own bed, sleep in it.
All right, this portion of the show brought to you by Alignment Healthcare, changing healthcare one person at a time. Coming up next, guess who made an appearance on Saturday Night Live on Saturday? It was another live Saturday Night Live. They did a good job. We've got that for you. Plus, we've got what else? Oh, the Jeff Passan story about baseball and some of the scenarios that they're now playing with. Apparently, baseball is sending the message that they're coming back in one way, shape, or form. They are coming back. So we'll get all that coming up for you next. 5 o'clock Fast Track is coming up. Mesa and Ireland, 710 ESPN. Yeah, what is going on? It is a big Monday. We are kicking off. Tomorrow, John, will mark, believe it or not, our sixth anniversary, our sixth week of doing the show live from our houses.
Wow.
Can you believe that? It's flown right by, hasn't it? It seems like yesterday.
No, not exactly.
Time does move a little bit slower in quarantine. I do notice that. Saturday night, we had a little game on the show, who would play Anthony Fauci on Saturday Night Live. And actually, Dr. Fauci was asked, Funch, do you have this, was asked who he would like to see play him. This was about a month ago he said this.
Saturday Night Live is back. Saturday Night Live is back.
If they did, which actor would you want to play you? Here are some suggestions that I've heard. Ben Stiller, Brad Pitt. Which one?
Oh, Brad Pitt, of course.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Fauci on Saturday Night Live.
Good evening. I'm Dr. Anthony Fauci. First, I'd like to thank all the older women in America who have sent me supportive, inspiring, and sometimes graphic emails. Now, there's been a lot of misinformation out there about the virus. And yes, the president has taken some liberties with our guidelines. So tonight, I would like to explain what the president was trying to say. And remember, let's all keep an open mind.
We had a great meeting today with a lot of the great companies, and they're going to have vaccines, I think, relatively soon.
Relatively soon is an interesting phrase. Relative to the entire history of Earth, sure, the vaccine's going to come real fast. But if you were to tell a friend, I'll be over relatively soon, and then showed up a year and a half later, well, your friend may be relatively pissed off.
So there you have a little bit of Brad Pitt. He got his wish. Brad Pitt is Anthony Fauci.
Yeah, I thought Brad Pitt was great. I thought Saturday Night Live did another great show. Under the circumstances, it is very hard to do. And I commend them for attempting to do it. I think it's a very tall order to fill, and they're doing, under the circumstances, as good as can be expected. And by the way, did you see the ratings for the NFL draft?
Oh, they were through the roof.
Yeah, I think it may change the way they do the draft forever. I mean, they're still going to do it in cities. Like next year it's in Cleveland. They're going to let it go to Vegas in 2 years. But now, Mace, now that we've seen what this looks like, I don't think they're going to try and bring 30 or 40 players to the draft. I think we're going to see a lot more people reacting from home.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to change the way we use media altogether. I mean, let's face it, we've all seen an ESPN get-up appearance or a jump appearance or a cable news appearance with a shaky Zoom background or a shaky Skype.
It's fine.
It's totally fine. You don't need to see bring somebody, you know, 1,000 miles to a studio, bring them across the country to a studio, or send cameras to somebody's house. It's fine if they just open their laptop, put their earbuds in, and make an appearance. All of a sudden, the bar has gotten really, really low for that. Like even, you know, my podcast, Chris Morales comes over. He does a great job engineering, and we'll return to that. But in the meantime, doing it on Skype, and it sounds good enough. That's totally fine.
Yeah, the one I did was on Skype.
Was on Skype, and it sounded totally fine. I mean, was it perfect? No, it wasn't like we were sitting in a studio, but was it good enough? Yes, it was totally good enough. So I think we're going to see that kind of stuff change probably forever. I mean, there are certain legacies from this thing, and that's not necessarily a bad one. We're going to be able to, for example, think about this. So today, we've got The Last Dance, last night, two episodes. Today, because of Skype and Zoom and all those things, we were able to hear from Isaiah Thomas on The Get Up. We were able to hear from Bill Laimbeer on The Jump. We didn't have to send cameras to them. They didn't have to fly in to do a studio hit. They just got on their laptops, and they were able to do it. We're able to get stuff more instantaneously. We will be after in this post-virus world that we're going to be moving into soon. So I think that's actually going to be one of the positives of this.
All right, now coming up next, we are going to give away a Rams hat and a T-shirt. Now, Lindsay, are we able to confirm that the Rams hat is, how can I say this without getting us in trouble, the new D-head hat?
Oh!
I don't know. I can't confirm it is, but I know that was one of the options that were sent to us to give away.
I asked for it. I got one, and I'm going to miss it. I'm going to wear it, Mace, when I three putt in golf. If you three putt, then you got to wear.
Did you get?
You got to wear that hat.
Did you get the Rams horn?
Yeah.
Hat?
Yeah.
Yeah. I got the Rams horn hat too.
And you're wearing it.
I'm wearing it now.
You're walking around sporting that thing on your head?
Walking around with it now. Absolutely am.
Excellent.
It is going to be the signature logo for this team. You called it the what?
I referred to it as the D-head hat.
Which I think is very, very unfair.
Well,
unfair.
You don't need to talk to me. You need to talk to Eric Dickerson. Eric Dickerson's the one out there saying it looks like that.
Yeah, Eric Dickerson, his initials are ED, man. ED.
There you go. All that right, just lends itself to the theory.
877-710-ESPN. Load up the phones. I got a simple. Do you have a game or I have a game? I have a game?
Are we playing a game?
Yeah, we're going to do a game.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Yeah, we'll do a simple game. 877-710-ESPN. This is for a hat and a T-shirt?
Yes.
Do I have that right?
Yep.
You do.
Hat and T-shirt, 877-710-ESPN. Simple game to get in on the brand-new Rams logo. Mason in Ireland, 710-ESPN. Okay, I love that Funch just said, I think he said vamp for a minute. Did he say vamp for a minute?
Why not? What's wrong with that?
Vamping is such an old-school thing.
I like it.
To vamp.
Wait, what does vamp mean? I don't even know what that means.
Vamp means fill.
Oh.
It's a synonym for fill.
Yeah, Phil.
Oh, okay.
It's like an old school way to say it. So I got a very simple game. We're going to give away a Rams new logo hat, new logo T-shirt. By the way, NFL Store, shame on you. I ordered a T-shirt from you guys, and you still haven't gotten it to me. I ordered it like 3 weeks ago, and it still hasn't gotten here.
You know who's handling their mail orders?
No.
LeVar Ball.
Sounds like it. Sounds like it. So very simple game, 877-710-ESPN. Anybody can play. All right, coming up, by the way, tomorrow I'm really excited. You know, we're trying to be, it's our sixth anniversary. It'll mark 6 weeks doing the show from our houses. And so we wanted a really motivational, exciting, positive guest. And Herm Edwards is going to be on the show tomorrow. The great Herm Edwards, who once told me he would never go back into coaching. Told me that in the green room at ESPN in Bristol one time. And, of course, now is the head football coach at Arizona State. There's nobody more positive, I don't think, than Herm Edwards.
I actually would be surprised, and we can ask Herm this tomorrow. I would be surprised if Herm takes another coaching job after this.
Well, yeah. Yeah, right. I think. And he's had some success there, by the way. I think he's, what, eight and five this
much
year?
Much better than people thought they would be this year.
Yeah, yeah. He had a nice year. He had a nice year. All right, so very, very simple game.
Are you going to bring somebody on before you tell what it is?
Yeah, bring somebody on
all
first.
Right. Anthony in L.A. is going to have your first crack at this. Hey, Anthony, you're on 710 ESPN. How are you?
I'm doing good. How about you guys?
All right, good. Here's Mace with the rules of the game. Here we go.
So this is closest without going over. Closest without going over.
The record
for field goals for a Rams rookie kicker is how many?
What do you think?
And by the way, that kicker is Frank Corral.
All right, Anthony, how many do you make?
58.
Boy, that's a healthy kicker. Okay, put him on hold, Funch. Sed from Fullerton. Hey, Sed.
How's it going?
Good, man. How many field goals for Frank Corral in his rookie year? Just take a guess.
30,
that's a good guess.
30
All right, thanks. Put him on hold, Funch. Rich from Covina. Hey, Rich.
Yeah.
How many?
What's up?
How many for Frank Corral in his rookie year? How many field goals?
I'll say 23.
23.
That's a really good guess. I like
that.
All right, Rich, hang on. Johnny from San Dimas. Hey, Johnny, you there?
Yeah, I'd say 29.
All right, 29. Johnny, you boxed yourself in there. That's okay. Maybe you hit it on the number. And now we'll go. We have one more, Willie from Tahunga. Hey, Willie, are you there?
Yes, I am.
You get the last guess. How many field goals for Frank Corral?
Is that a game or the season?
Season.
Season.
Season. 36.
36.
Okay.
All right.
Mace, I don't know the answer. Can I make a prediction?
Yes.
I think most of these guys have gone over. Has anyone gone under? Is it closest without going over?
Somebody nailed it.
On the number.
Johnny with 29.
Whoa!
Held it.
Hey, yeah. Funch, put Johnny up on line six.
Thank you, guys.
Johnny,
thank
that's guys. Unbelievable you because you had to nail it because somebody else guessed 30.
That's my son's birthday, my wife's birthday, my grandfather's birthday. It's 29 all the way. I love it.
Awesome, man.
We'll send you a Ram shirt. We'll send you the same hat
thank
that
you.
Mason and I are walking around in.
Thank
and
you.
And we promise it will not take six
hey,
weeks.
Hey, how are you holding up during the quarantine, man?
Well, I'm a civil servant, so I'm getting off work, but I appreciate all the entertainment you guys give us out here, and God bless us if we get through all this stuff and start back getting America where it's supposed to be.
You bet. We're going to get back, man. It's happening.
We're coming
Thanks,
back.
Thanks, man. You know what Jim Hill always says? Keep the faith, man. Keep the faith.
I was just texting with Jim Hill the other day.
Keep the faith.
Okay, so circling back to the last dance, can I make an observation?
Yeah, go ahead.
Right, one of the things I'm most happy about with the last dance, because I feel like he's never been fully appreciated, is I think people are getting a front row seat to see why Phil Jackson was so great.
Yep.
Think about this, Mace. He gets the Bulls head coaching job. The Bulls had taken the Pistons to seven games the year before he got there when Doug Collins was the coach. All right. Jerry Krause fires Collins, which was a gutsy move by Krause, who you know, Mace, I don't like. But still, that's gutsy if you're close, but you don't think you're quite there yet. and you fire a guy who just made it to Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals. That's ballsy. So Krause does it, and he brings in Phil Jackson. And the first thing Phil does is he goes to Michael Jordan, who's the league MVP and recognized as the best player in the NBA, and he says, I'm going to take the ball out of your hands. And Jordan says, what are you talking about? And Jordan said it on the documentary last night. I was not a fan of Phil's because Doug Collins wanted to put the ball in my hands and Phil wanted to take it out. And he said, you can win scoring titles and you'll win every scoring title if we put the ball in your hands every time, but you'll never win a championship. And he explains to him that, look, if I put you in this triangle and Tex Winter, the creator of it, is going to be sitting right next to me, it doesn't mean you can't do your own thing. It just creates space for you.
Yep.
You'll touch the ball in most possessions, but right now the defense knows if four guys guard you, they don't have to worry about everybody else. Imagine if they have to start worrying about everybody else. And when it manifests itself is Jordan has been in the league for 7 years. He's never won a title. It's 80-80 going to the fourth quarter against the Lakers of Game 5 in the 91 Finals. And if the Bulls win this quarter, they win their first ever title in the history of the franchise. And Phil Jackson, with that staring him in the face, looks at Jordan and goes, man, John Paxson is wide open. If you throw the ball, they think that this is fourth quarter, game tied at 80, it's the Lakers. They think you're going to take every shot. Drive to the basket like you're going to shoot it and throw it to Paxson. He'll be standing by himself. And he throws it to Paxson, and Paxson hits six jumpers.
Yep.
And the Bulls win their first title. And everybody else went, oh, my God. They've got Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan, two of the best defensive players ever. They run like gazelles. And now Jordan's sharing the ball. And that, Mace, was the beginning of 6 months. Then he got to, then when Phil came to the Lakers, he gave the same speech to Kobe and to Shaq and said, look, we're going to build this triangle and it's going to create space for you guys. And if they don't double and triple you, then go to work. But when they do, these guys like Rick Fox and Robert Horry and Derek Fisher are going to be wide open. Throw them the ball. The other team won't be able to defend it.
Well, and I love that one. First of all, Tex Winter is the other guy that's
completely
unheralded in that thing. Because, you know, they were the principles of Tex Winter that Phil Jackson was really applying. The uniqueness, I think, of Phil Jackson is that he brought that sort of spirituality to the game.
Well, you see the part about all of the Indian headdresses and how he bonded with Rodman over it. That Rodman said, "Hey, Phil, some tribe in Oklahoma made me an honorary Indian." He goes, "You know, Dennis, what they gave you was that you're the eccentric one, that you're allowed to beat to your own drum.
You're the one that walks backwards," is what he said. "You're the one that walks backwards." There's a scene of them all doing yoga, which was
with,
awesome,
and Phil doing it.
And Phil doing it along with them. I mean, he's a hippie, right? Phil has always been a hippie, and he brought sort of that's the only reason he was able to manage, I think, those personalities away. The way he finessed Dennis Rodman to fit into that machine that was the Bulls. And by the way, I never knew. Did you ever know the story about the 48-hour trip to Vegas?
Nope. But you know what? I'll tell you an interesting story, Mace. So I was the sideline reporter. I don't think I've ever told the story on the air. I was the sideline reporter for the Lakers for, I don't know, for 10 years before I switched over to doing play-by-play. I would do certain fun kind of in-game hits.
Yep.
And you remember Dennis Rodman came and played very briefly for the Lakers. He played maybe 11 or 12 games. The Lakers took a shot at him, and it didn't work out. But in the middle of that, he was with Carmen Electra.
Right.
And so I found Carmen at a game.
Yep.
And she's striking in person.
Yeah,
I mean,
she's beautiful.
When you see her, she's just, and she's, you know, She's got the, you know, the tremendous upper body strength, as we like to say. Really, really pretty face. Like, you see her walking up the aisle, you can't miss her.
Yeah, supermodel stuff.
So I go to her. I say, "Hey, Carmen, my name's John. I do Lakers TV. Can I walk you up to the top of the aisle? And when we come back from this timeout, I'm just going to do a quick 1 minute thing with you." And she goes, "Sure." So she gets up and walks up the aisle, and I'm standing there, and I say to the producer, "All right, I've got Carmen." And Mace, so many people engulfed us at the top of the aisle that the Redcoats killed the shot.
Mm.
And I've never had that happen with anybody else. The closest it ever came to happening was we were doing third chair one night, and Justin Bieber came up.
Right, right.
And Bieber was doing the game with Michael, and I remember he kept yelling, "Boom goes the dynamite."
Yeah, boom goes the dynamite.
We should dig that up and play it one day
on the
show.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny.
But so we're doing the game, and I said, "Hey, Justin, you want to do my job? You want to do a couple of..." And it got so crazy with people turning around, taking their cell phone pictures, that the Staples Center guys goes, "Hey, John, you gotta end this soon because it's going to be a safety hazard. No one's watching the game, and it's, you know, people are jamming the aisles."
Yeah.
But it never got that far. We just let Justin go. With Carmen, so many people jammed the aisle, and so many people rammed to the exit, we never interviewed her. I had to let her go. The Red Coach goes, "This is a safety hazard." And that was Rodman at the height of his popularity, man. He just, he was like... I remember McDonald's in Chicago came up with this cup that if you put cold liquid in it, it would change the hair on Rodman. There's a picture of Rodman with his crazy hair. And the cups got so popular that people were beating each other up for him. You know, they had like a crime result.
Right,
as
right.
These, and the McDonald's had to kill the promotion.
Well, you know, I thought from watching last night, they did a good job of this, that it was really Madonna who opened the door.
Sent him down the
Rodman.
Road.
Sent him down that sort of personal,
you have
creative.
You have to be, don't let them tell you what to do. You have to be you.
And he just carried that. I don't know how long they dated or how long they were together, but I know they dated. It was very famous while it was going on. But after that, he was never the same. He was always like doing completely his own thing. And owning all that, I think, is what made him unique. And by the way, him talking about rebounding was fascinating. Him
he would get like guys like me and you and the guys he knew weren't going to make shots and say, "Hey, come down here. I just want to see how the ball bounces off the rim. Just take 20 shots. It doesn't matter." And so he would get with his teammates and say, "Okay, now I know where Michael's misses are going. I know where Scotty's misses are going." I'd never heard anybody do that before.
No, I mean, he raised it to, I mean, the way he described it and the way it was cut in the show was brilliant. He raised it to the level of being an art. And so many of his rebounds were knocking it up in the for him to grab him. And the number of times they showed him diving into the stands, seats.
By the way, circling back to the Phil Jackson thing, did you see the story Jeannie Buss sent out last night about Phil Jackson and the books?
No.
Oh, okay. Let's break, and I'll tell you that when we come back.
Okay,
and then
cool.
We got 5 o'clock fast track in 20 minutes.
All right. And during these challenging times, 710 ESPN is here for you. We would like to spread the word and promote any local businesses who are hiring and looking for a workforce right now. Email us at ESPNLAMarketing@ESPN.com. Let us know if your local business is hiring and how they can apply. We will spread the word for you. Again, if you're hiring, email us at ESPNLAMarketing@ESPN.com. Mason, Ireland, 710 ESPN. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So Last Dance last night. By the way, one of the things we didn't play. At some point, Phil Jackson gave Dennis Rodman permission to go on a 48-hour vacation to Las Vegas.
And he took 96 after he
gave
him 48.
He took 96. And ultimately, Michael Jordan showed up at Dennis Rodman's room, and Carmen Electra was there.
There's a knock on the door. It's Michael Jordan. And I hid. I don't want him to see me like that, so I'm just like hiding behind the couch with covers over me. Come on, you gotta get to practice.
So, Michael Jordan at the door and Carmen Electra in hiding.
All right, so
you're going to talk about the Jeannie Buss thing.
Okay, so I'm going to send this out on Twitter right now. Twitter at LA Ireland. Okay, so Jeannie sent out a story on Instagram last night. And she was talking about, and I was around when this was happening. She was around when Phil, her and Phil were dating, when Phil would pick a book and give it to each player. I think it was for Christmas.
Yep.
And Jeannie wrote last night, she said, it made me sad if I heard any player joking about it. I didn't want Phil's feelings to be hurt. I shared with him how I felt and asked him if it bothered him if players joked about it or didn't pay attention to the book. His answer was, no, it doesn't bother me. If they take the book and put it on a shelf and it sits there for 10 years, that's okay, because there will come a day when he reads it and the message will be delivered. There's no time frame on teaching.
It's funny.
And Jeannie went on to say, Phil never coaches a player for a season. He coaches them for a lifetime. And I thought, you know, Mace, I've always thought, here's a guy that coached for 20 seasons.
Yep.
And I get some, Popovich is now north of 20 seasons, and I hear these debates. Who's better, Phil Jackson or Greg Popovich? It's not close. All right? It's not close. Take the best 20 years of Pop's run and put it up against Phil's 20-year run, which is the only 20 years.
Right.
Phil, think about this, Mace. Never had a losing season. Not one time. When he got to the Bulls, he won three straight titles from year one. The very first year, title. Second year, title. Third year, title. Michael goes to play baseball for 2 years, or he might have won eight in a row. But Michael leaves, so he takes a two-year hiatus. Michael comes back. Title, title, title. Jerry Krause inexplicably breaks him up.
Yep.
After a title, he takes a year off, comes to the Lakers. Year one, title, title, title. Goes to the finals four times in 5 years, and then they break him up. Then he comes back and brings him back to the top of the mountain. And in 08, gets him back to the finals. In 09, title. In 10, title. Mace, 11 titles in 20 years. Zero losing seasons. Why is this a debate? The only person that's in Phil's league is Red Auerbach. And right. Red coached at a time when there weren't as many teams and the competition was different.
Right.
Phil Jackson, and I've always wondered why Phil doesn't have a bigger tree. All right. Right now in the NBA, there are two of Phil's ex-players coaching. Steve Kerr, who's the best coach in the league, has the highest winning percentage in the league, and Luke Walton. If I'm an owner, an NBA owner, Phil's sitting on his lake in Montana, and he's still mentoring coaches. Ask Frank Vogel what he thinks of Phil. Ask any of these. Ask Doc Rivers. Ramona's got a story about this today on ESPN.com. Ask any of these current coaches who they call when they need advice. If right. I'm an owner or a GM looking for a coach, the first person I'm calling is Phil Jackson. And
not
remember,
not to be the coach.
No, to ask him what he thinks. Who in
right,
your tree?
Right, exactly. Because he's not going to coach again. But you're saying as a mentor, he's ideal.
Correct. And people say, well, no, what are we talking about, Ireland? The Knicks put him in charge of basketball, and he failed for 5 years. You remember who he tried to hire at the Knicks.
Yeah.
Steve Kerr.
Yeah.
Steve Kerr turned him down because his daughter was in school in San Francisco.
Yep.
Or Steve Kerr goes to the Knicks. Why Phil Jackson is looked at by any generation as anything less than the greatest coach of all time is beyond me. And I'm glad this Last Dance doc is showcasing not only what Phil did, but how he did it. Because I think that's the difference. If I would have told you, if I would have just given that speech I just gave to you, Mace, 3 weeks ago, you would have gone, yeah, Phil's great. But now that you've seen it, doesn't it give you a different perspective?
The whole thing gives me a different perspective. It's changing my view of an era of basketball. I always loved Phil. Like, I got to talk to Phil one night at of all places, a Leonard Cohen concert at what was then the Microsoft Arena. And I thought, you know, here is the most eclectic guy in the world at a Leonard Cohen concert, which I thought was incredibly cool. And there were so many things, you know, Phil resonated with me on a bunch of different, you know, Phil's the only sports guy who ever recommended reading one of my favorite books, Thich Nhat Hanh, The Art of Mindfulness. And, you know, it's funny he said that about how he mentors guys for a lifetime. Do you ever have a book that you get a book and you're just not quite ready for it?
Sure.
And then you go back and you read it. Like, it was that way for me with Catcher in the Rye, where I got Catcher in the Rye, and I tried reading it, and I was like, I don't quite get this. And I tried reading it again, and all of a sudden it became like one of my favorite books in history, just because I wasn't quite ready for it when it came along. I mean, I think he's an artist as a coach. I mean, the ability to get guys to buy into their roles, the way he managed guys through public conversation. By the way, there was one thing last night I wanted to bring up. So there's one scene where Rodman is walking down a hallway, and they just cut from Phil saying, yeah, Dennis isn't playing his best right now. And the reporters were around Rodman as he was walking down the hallway. He says, yeah, I'm just bored with the whole thing. I need something to throw another log on this fire. And all I could think was, could you imagine in today's sports media if a professional athlete said, I'm bored right now, I got to find something to throw another log on this fire, he would be shredded. It's Manny Machado. It is Manny Machado. It's not my cup of tea. I mean, he would have been destroyed for that. But the times have changed. And that's the other thing is we're getting to react to these stories and this narrative for the first time on social media. So all of a sudden, people can tweet about the stuff that they weren't able to tweet about when it was actually going on, which is actually a cool experiment.
I'm so glad that people are getting to see how Phil did it from the inside, because I think by the end of this series, people are going to go, no wonder the guy won 11 titles and never had a losing season. And he does it without any of the Bobby Knight F you cussing, you know. It's
he does
a completely
it art,
different
for
approach.
Lack of a better term, artfully. He does right. It artfully. It's like a master class in coaching. He could do one of those master class things.
Well, maybe he should. I might even do it.
I would buy that. Absolutely. All right. Coming up next for you is 5 o'clock fast track. There was one thing I wanted to get. Oh yeah, we did not get to any jingles today. Do you know? Have you noticed how that one jingle plays a lot now?
Yeah, it's great.
ESPN Los Angeles 710 Sports.
ESPN 710 Los Angeles Sports.
We still are looking for more jingles. You can use our voicemail. Our voicemail number is 530-ESPN-710. We didn't get any today. We will get to some tomorrow. 530-ESPN-710. You can also email me direct, venicemace@gmail.com. I'm reading emails. My DMs are open. You can always tweet us. You can use #AskMasonAndIreland. And tomorrow we'll do a better job of taking some phone calls, too. But 5 o'clock Fast Track is coming up next. John, in Fast Track today, I've got the birthday game.
Okay.
Now, I am going to send Alan Sliwa a text and say, do not listen to Fast Track. Do you trust him if he says, I didn't listen?
Of course not. He's already proven he'll lie about that.
The last time, do you think he lied?
I think the first time he lied, for sure. I don't know if he did the last time. I'll never trust him after he lied the first time.
Okay.
Because we know he's willing to do it.
We'll do it again. You and I will do it, and then we'll test it on Sliwa to see how he does, and we can make some mythical money bets on that. So that's coming up for you in Fast Track. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN.